It's fascinating. We talked about the Olympics last week. We're going to talk about it again this morning. And it's you see all of these athletes and all they put in and they strive for with this prize in mind. We got a little bit of a picture there as to what it takes to motivate to be able to achieve those things. So before I get really involved this morning, I need to throw out some clarification and even an apology. Our church email is having major problems. We don't know what's going on. So here's kind of the bottom line with it, is some of you are getting email, some of you are not. There's been a number of prayer requests that have been attempted to go out. People aren't getting them. We apologize for that. You know, these are emails including Jim Palmquist got a bad burn on his legs while working on the roof. Virtually nobody knows that because our email, we have a suspicion that MSN has updated their site and somehow some of you are no longer on it. And so, we apologize for it. Mariah Gross is in the hospital right now, pneumonia, and she has an esophagus issue that they're working to rectify. You know, so some of you know this, some of you are not aware of these things. They've all tried to be gone out on email, but they have not. Pat Van Orsdale, if you're not aware, she did have her procedure surgery was on Friday. That went very well. So if you're not updated on Pat Van Orsdale, there is that as well. Carissa, our daughter who had tonsillectomy she's here today. She may talk for a little while. She's very chatty. She may talk longer than she really needs to be, you know, and then she just may wear out and then she stops talking, starts nodding and things like that because it gets sore. So again, I apologize for it. Don was working, I know, extensively on Saturday. We haven't gotten it fixed yet. So hopefully we can get that rectified. It may come to we need to ask you guys for, hey, we need your email address again. We need to know who wants to be on prayer chain. So bear with us as we get that rectified. And again, I apologize that it's come to that. So we get into this idea of the Olympics again. And there's something, it's interesting, and I appreciate it. Karen actually addressed it here as well. We see it somewhat on this video, this idea of human nature. What we saw in the video goes against human nature. You know, what we try to do in our culture for the most part is we try to take things that maybe are difficult and we try to make things easier. You know, the whole concept of innovations and inventions oftentimes is geared toward making things and life easier or simpler. My mom, I remember my dad, he's such a great man. He would give my mom all kinds of wonderful household appliances for, you know, her birthday and Mother's Day, anything that really would help ensure that she stays in the kitchen. One year, I don't remember what it was for, but he got her this Roomba. Do you know what a Roomba is? Have you had a Roomba? It's a small disc like this. It's like a robotic vacuum is really what it is. And so what's fascinating is you can take this thing and you can program it so then while you're at work, this little unit goes around your whole house and it operates on different bumpers and things like that and vacuums your whole house while you're gone. It's designed to make something that is a task that nobody wants to do suddenly easier, thus saving you time. And the more time that we save, the more time we'll have to do to enjoy the things that we want to do. And that's a marketing slogan we see all over the place. And yet what we find is we have less and less time. So obviously, maybe their invention works, but the reality of us having more time is just not working. Think of the invention of the tractor, for instance. Everything that the tractor does, for the most part, could have been done and had been done way before. You know, fields had been plowed before, fields were planted before, fields were harvested. You know, so we have the tractor that comes along and it does all that, but it revolutionizes and makes all of this stuff easier. Could we still plow the fields by hand? Yeah. We'd probably all be starving because we wouldn't be able to produce enough food, you know, so there's a reality with that. But the reality of it is, tractor was created to make our lives easier. Think of the automatic transmission. You went from 3 pedals down to 2 pedals. Oh, that left leg is so much in better shape now, you know. It's so relieved, it's so relaxed because it doesn't have to push that clutch anymore, especially if you happen to be stuck in rush hour traffic in a manual transmission. We even have cars themselves now that drive themselves. And it's a little bit freaky to hop into an automobile, put in where you need to go, and then the car just takes you there. They say that it's safer, you know, but it's running. I can't buy it. And they say, oh, yeah, it's way better than, you know, because drivers, you know, are dumb. You know, but our cars are smart is really what it's turning into be. And so it's safer if you just let the car, you know, drive itself. And it's a little bit scary because if, let's say, you know, they had those Prius commercials at the Super Bowl this last year where these guys go and rob a bank and they're escaping with the Prius. What if this Prius goes wherever the car wants to go and then the police can hack into it and then they just have you drive right at the police station? You know, seriously, think about it. If you have one of these cars, who's to say that they won't do that? I know I'm a little bit of a conspiracy theorist in that sense, but who's to say that the cops aren't just going to arrest me and I'm going to drive me right to the police station? Not that I've done anything yet. Remote control TVs. I remember our first remote control TV. It was about this big. It was a console type. You know what a console television is? This is the television that used to be in a box. You bought it that way. It came in a box and you'd set it on the floor. And it looked like this great big dresser. And our first remote control TV, and it had this remote, and my dad was just enamored with it. And he said, wow. You know, he'd sit there and flip the remotes. And so then he would sit down because he was curious, like, how good is this thing? And so he'd take it and he'd hold it up to his leg and he'd change channels through. He's like, look at that. It goes right through my leg. He was just was fascinated by it. It's like, get a hobby. But it's interesting, it didn't take long. This was our first one. It didn't take long before he's sitting there, can't find the remote. You know what I'm saying? And so then you start looking under the sofas, you start looking around behind the television. All the while, it's taking you longer than it would be if you just got up and changed the channel. Because back in the day, we didn't ever have cable. So we only had like four channels to choose from. So it wouldn't have taken much to find out what was on. But it's a reality that we want life to be easy. So we're going to be spending some time this morning dealing with the Olympics. And what's interesting, this Summer Olympics started with a controversy. The 31st Olympiad started with this controversy where we had a nation, the Russians, who were caught cheating. All right? And not only were they just caught cheating, they were actually caught with this idea of promoted cheating by their government, was basically saying, okay, here's what we want you guys to do. We want you to be the best in the world, but we don't necessarily want you to have to work to be the best in the world. We want to guarantee that you're going to be the best in the world, and so we're going to help you cheat. We encourage you. In fact, we mandate that you take these supplements, these performance-enhancing drugs, so that you can then, and there was this huge ban where 100-plus athletes, Russian athletes, were banned from the Olympics. But we see it there. It's the same idea where, okay, you could put the work in to be that good, or you can just take this drug and you'll be that good just automatically. And so we saw this sanctioned cheating as the Olympics, before the Olympics even began. And this caused me to think and to wonder, you know, last week we talked about all these Olympic sports that are no longer Olympic sports, and we had some fun with that. Well, there's been a number, and more than we can even count, but a number of situations where we've actually had cheating in the Olympics, okay? So here we go. I want you to see some of these. Okay, who's this guy? This is the 1972 Munich Olympics. What it was the marathon. This was, as the marathon's concluding, I don't know if you've ever watched the Olympic marathon, what happens is they run out and they leave and they go run for a ways and then they come running back into the stadium and they finish inside the stadium. Well, here comes this guy running into the stadium, almost sprinting into the stadium, and everyone's like, yeah, way to go. He's not even in the race. No. It ended up being just some German college student who decided to just run in as if he's finishing and winning the race. So this is not the winner of the 1972 Munichs. You know, we would call him cheater, okay? How about this one here? It's not the only incident we've had of people cheating in the marathon. And I understand why you would cheat. If you're going to cheat in a race, I understand why it would be the marathon, because it's 26.2 miles. Well, this one was interesting. This wasn't the winner. This was third place. A Greek runner. This is in 1896. Okay, Greek runner Spyridon Belokas. He took the bronze medal. But what's fascinating is it found out a while after the fact that he had actually hopped on a few carriage rides to get to the finish. You know, it's like, oh, I'm so tired. I could really use a horse and a carriage right now. You know, and so he cheated. And they found out, took his medal away. That's what they do when you get caught cheating. This one is fabulous. Okay, let me present this for you. So in 1932, during the Olympics, she won. Okay, she was the 100-meter champion. And then in 1936, she won. She was the 100-meter sprint champion. But in the 1936, okay, after she wins, all of her supporters started saying, hey, wait a minute. She ran way too fast. Can't happen. No, she ran too fast. We think she's a boy. I know, okay? So catch this. Okay, so I don't know how to put this. She's not. All right, let's just leave it at that. She passed the test, if you will. Okay. What's ironic is she's not. I know, right? Okay, so I mean, seriously, now take a moment and just look at their faces. Yep. Yeah. And it's just fascinating. So basically, the supporters said, well, she ran too fast. She's cheating. Well, the one that was accusing him was actually the cheater. Just the things that people do to win an Olympic medal. Yeah. Here we go. Remember this one? 2002. We had this big controversy in the Winter Olympics. We had Jamie Sayle and David Peltier from Canada. And they had skated the skate of their lives. This is the couple skate. And yet they don't win. Remember this? And then they find out after the fact, it's like, what in the world? How did that happen? The Russians ended up winning. There was this deal between the French judge and the Russian judge. And basically what it was is the Russian said, all right, we'll let the French win the ice dancing. And the French said, all right, we'll let the Russian win the couple skate. And it was just cheating. That's just no way to put it. So they found out. I think they were upgraded to their gold medals then after that. But it's more cheating. What about this? Juice Johnson. This would have been in 1988. I remember this. Carl Lewis, who's second place right there, had won the previous year in 1984. He was the guy to beat. Well, Ben Johnson, the Canadian, beat him and just blew him out of the water. And was just like, wow, Ben Johnson, he's so great. Well, here it is. He tested positive for performance enhancing drugs. He had his medal taken away from him. People and the things that we do to make this work, to make our life, in a sense, easier. And then the one that beats them all, the whack heard around the world. You remember Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding, who in the national, the U.S. national Olympic qualifying and such, Nancy Kerrigan here won. Tanya Harding was second, while she wanted to have one removed from the Olympic. This is before you were even born, wasn't it, Chris? That's right. Anyway, so Nancy here wanted to have clear sailing into the, or no, I'm sorry, Tanya wanted to have clear sailing into the Olympic finals. And so basically had her boyfriend do a little hitman job and whack Nancy on the knee and try to take her out. You know, the things that we do to cheat at athletics. I cheated once. Well, that's kind of cheating. It wasn't really cheating. So I was wrestling this gentleman. It was a 0-0 score in the third period. And in wrestling, in high school wrestling, you know, it's different than Olympic wrestling. You can't, what's called clasping, you can't reach around a guy and just clasp your hands like this. You have to have a pinhold. So that's illegal. You can't do that. So I'm wrestling, and the guy's holding me down. I'm underneath. I take his hands, and I put his hands together. I was just like, and so the guy, the official, you know, so I take his hands and put them like this. Now, technically, because I'm holding there, it's not clasping. But then I kind of sit up so the official can see. And sure enough, the guy's hands went like this. Bing. Got 1 point, 1-0. I won. I know. I'm so ashamed of telling you that, but it's a true story. So last week, we talked about how we need to forget all that is behind and press on to the goal. You know, that goal that is laid out before us. And so this morning then, so it was Philippians last week. We're going to be dealing with the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9 this morning. But I want to show you, because, and we'll come back to this map in a little bit, but I want to show you, here's Corinth right there. This green area is Greece. It's ancient Greece. And so Corinth is right here, and we're going to talk a little bit about it, but it lies on this really, really close to this little isthmus, this little strip of land that connects these two large land masses. It's connecting there, and so Corinth just lies right in there. And its place is significant to that. And what Paul is addressing to this church in Corinth, all right, this church that is in part of the Greece and the nation of Greece, he's dealing with these church divisions. So within the church, there's these little pockets of division that have risen up, and he's trying to kind of squelch them and saying, you guys, you're missing it. You're creating something here, similar to what we talked about last week with the Philippians, but you're creating some things that shouldn't be there. You're holding on to some truths that just are not true. They're falsehoods. Some things like the Lord's Supper. So there was these clashes where some of these people say, wow, this is the Lord's Supper, and they would just gorge themselves on the Lord's Supper. And Paul says, wait, no, you guys can't do that. Things like Gnosticism, where it's just there were some of these groups that say, oh, you know, you believe that, but we have the secret knowledge. This Gnostic knowledge. We have this secret knowledge. We know what it takes to be saved. And so they start spreading this dissension. And so you have all these divisions that are happening in this church in Corinth. And remember that they were heavily influenced by Greek. in their Grecian culture. And in the Grecian culture, it's a polytheistic nation where you have a number of different gods. You have the god of sex, you have the god of war, you have the god of love, and all of these different gods that influence it. And they had statues all over the place. So you have a heavy influence of all of these different areas coming down into this church in Corinth. And I think that's where some of these divisions are popping up, looking for this truth. And it's like, well, we got the truth, we got the truth. And Paul's just saying, all right, there is only one truth. And that's one of the things that he's really addressing here with these Corinthians. So I want to get started here. And as we jump in, we're leading into verse 22, the second half of verse 22, chapter 9 of 1 Corinthians. And Paul has just been done stating the verses prior to that. It's like, okay, to the Jews, I became a Jew. To the Gentiles, I became a Gentile. He's just saying, all right, I'm going to associate. I'm going to connect. I'm going to make connections with all people. And this is what we see here, he says. So I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. You know, basically what he's saying is, all right, I might not be, you know, a runner, but as a runner, I'm going to connect with the runner. I'm going to, like he's going to lay out here, you know, I'm not a runner, but I can understand the training and things like that it takes. And so I'm going to make this connection any way that I can so that I might save some. I mean, he just lays out this, there's his goal and his passion exists even here. And we're going to just see that poured out here this morning as far as we look at this idea of this prize that he's got laid up for him. And he's so focused on that prize. And we talked about that last week. I'll bring that up in a second here as well. So here's the passage. I have become all things to all people so that by all possible means I might save some. That's his passion. And then he says, I do all this for the sake of the gospel that I may share in its blessings. Everything that Paul is doing, everything that Paul is saying is being poured out for the sake of the gospel. All right. It doesn't have to do with being right, being wrong, having all of these, okay, well, maybe you're, no, it's this idea of like everything that I'm doing it for the sake of the gospel. That is what I'm striving for. That is what I want to have accomplished. All right. As I'm pressing on, we talked about it last week, I'm pressing on to that prize that is set out before me, but I'm doing everything for the sake of the gospel. And so then verse 24, and this is where he kind of transitions into some of this language. After he said, I've become all things to all people, he says this to the Corinthians, and we're going to touch on this, but he says to the Corinthians in Greece, do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. And so here's what we have. Here's Corinth, all right? There were four Panhellenic games that existed in Greece. We oftentimes obviously associate it with the Olympics, okay? And the Olympics were right near Olympia, but they were not actually held in Olympia. They were actually held in Elis, all right? Those were held every 4 years, as they still are now. But there was other games. There was the Isthmus Games. The Isthmus Games were called the Isthmus Games because of this little isthmus right next to Corinth, all right? So the Isthmian Games, the Corinthians would have been super associated with. I mean, they knew it well, and these were every 2 years that they had. But they also had games in Argos, and they also had games in Delphi. You know, so in this region, there's just this huge emphasis on these Olympic-style, these competitions. And people would train. That's what they'd pour themselves into. They would train for this. And now we're going to see Paul take this language, this idea, this concept that these Corinthians had, and he's going to pull it in. You know what these runners do to train. You know how they are striving to get the prize. Well, and he's going to relate it. He's going to, in a sense, become all things to all people for that very purpose. But in honor of the Olympic Games, and this idea that we're going to be competing, I wanted to use an illustration here. And so I've asked Carl and Isaac to help me out. So come on up here, boys. Okay. All right. You still ready for this? You have no idea. Okay. Here's what we're going to do. He's going to take them off. I already warned him. Because shoes and socks are just not fair, are they? That would be called cheating. So in honor of the games, we're going to have a little race between these two. Now, I've watched you in school, right? I've gone to your meets, and you're both very fast, and you're both very close. So this is going to be wonderful. Are you excited for this? Okay, so I've explained to them, they're going to have a starting line back there, and I've got Kim is ready, she's going to give them the race, and they're going to race up here. I'm going to move this back away, because otherwise someone's going to have a bloody head. You're going to die with this. You're going to be responsible here, right? You show good sportsmanship? Yes? You better. I'll talk to your father. Okay. Okay, so I want you guys to go back to the starting line and just wait, and I'm going to lay out the prize that is going to be set before you, okay? I wish I had Olympic music right now. I'd play it for you. Okay. Here's your prize. It's a penny. I know. It's just like, I know what you think. It's like, wow, he is so generous. Okay. I'm setting this penny right on top of the, can you see it? No, I can't see it. It doesn't even exist. Okay. I have a penny sit there around the, okay, no, I'm not saying go. Okay. I don't even know when it's going to happen. But, you know, when I step to the side, because I don't want to stand here, Kim is going to start you, and when she starts you, then you're going to race up here, and the first one to take the penny gets the prize. You with me on this? Okay. Anytime you're ready, Kim. It's coming. And they would say in the Olympics, this is a long hold. Do I need to say go? Nope. That's a false start, and you would be disqualified. That's so not okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. Blame Mark. What is that? That is not. No. Don't do that. No. That was just mood music. Get back to the starting line. Okay. That's fine. I can just say go too. It's not going to fly. One more time. If you hear pretty music, it's not it. Okay. It's like, wow, this is so soothing. I just think I'll walk up. Okay. I know. Whoa. Ah! Oh, don't hurt yourselves. Who got it? Oh, Isaac got it. Okay. I don't think it's safe with the socks on. I think we got to go barefoot. You're going to hurt someone. No, you can keep that. That's your prize. Okay? You ready for round two? Because they always have heats, right? Okay, you guys sit back there. Give your socks to Sarah. You're not, yeah. I just multiplied the prize by 10. I know. Just call me generous. Here you go. I'm sliding this back a little ways because you guys really scared me. Okay, we have, you know, because they have heats, and then you have prelims, then you have semifinals. Okay, ready? Okay, here. I'm going to protect you guys here. Ah! Yeah. You got it? Oh, my word. Carl, seriously? You kind of were there first. He just totally gypped you. Okay, ready for round three? We're up to the, we'll call this the quarterfinals. That's funny. That's a good one, wasn't it? Yeah. Aren't they? Thank you. Thank you, Pam. Appreciate that. Oh, I multiplied by 10. Oh, it's like suddenly this is getting serious. It's like a dollar. I know, right? My mom's going like, Carl, you know, just step it up. Here, watch this. Okay. All right, anytime you're ready, Kim. Oh! Ah! Oh, you did slip. You got a bad start. So you can keep that. All right, Carl. You ready? I multiplied by 10. That's right. That's right. Thank you. Appreciate you clarifying that, Brody. It's really great. Okay. You may get this one, Carl. It's like, you know, it's all that other stuff is just nuts. Okay?
You're not going to let them keep that. You're too cheap.
Yeah, we'll see. Go, Carl! Wow, you're getting loaded. All right, I multiplied by 10. No, I couldn't do that. I'll give you that, though. Before you guys go, though, I want to talk. Here's the thing. What if I... Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll live. What if we had raised for that $100? What if... Let me rephrase it. What if I had said it this way, you know, 1 month from now, we're going to raise for $100. What would you do between now and then? Anything? What would you do? You'd practice, right? Yeah, because it's like suddenly you have some of this great prize at that stake, right? Now, if it was a penny, would you do it? No, I wouldn't either, to be honest with you. A dime? Probably not. Dollar? Yeah, $10, maybe. But if it was $100, you would probably start practicing, wouldn't you, Carl? And you would come ready with your running shoes on, and you would, like, you know, have put in hours and hours of start time and things like that, right? You're not talking. Carl, thank you for talking. Appreciate that. Okay. You guys can go back and have a seat. Thank you. Isaac, don't forget your shoes. In the Isthmian Games, they would have received this prize every 2 years. If you won, you got a crown of pine branches. I know, right? And if you won in the Olympics, you got this crown of olive branches. And the olive branch, and if you won in one of those, the Delphi Games, you won a stalk of celery. And I was like, what? Mmm, delicious. That's actually, that just resulted in negative calories. But it's fascinating, and we're going to see this in Paul's language here this morning. So they get this crown of either pine branches, or they get this crown of olive branches, and it was esteemed. I mean, this was huge. If you had that crown placed on your head, that was a major, major prize. And these people worked for 4 years for the Olympic Games, 2 years for other, and they wore themselves into such great shape so that they could have that crown placed on their head. And what's fascinating is there was only one prize. There wasn't a second place. There wasn't a bronze medal. There was none of that. They strove and they worked and they worked just so they could have that crown of glory, as they thought, placed on their head. And we're going to see this language now. Watch what Paul does here. So 1 Corinthians verse 25, he says, everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. So he's talking to the Corinthians. They know what he's talking about. So these people that are working for these pine crowns, these pine branches, these wreaths on their head, they go into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. Some versions will even say a crown that withers, and that's literal. It's dead branches. A crown of dead branches. It's like you guys getting that prize of a penny. It's just like, comparatively. And then he says, but we, and it's fascinating, you got to look at the plural aspect of it, the word we, because it's not just Paul saying I. Big difference here because of what we're going to see. So he says, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever, this idea of an eternal crown. Catch this, we've got some other passages. This idea of crowns in the scriptures is phenomenal. So look at some of these examples. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. It says, now there is in store, this is Paul's writing to Timothy, now there is in store for me this crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day, and not only to me, but also to all who have longed for his appearing. You look at this contrast to prize, this crown of righteousness. You know, we've talked about over these last few weeks, we can be as self-righteous as we want to be. We saw Paul last week, he's like, I have every right. I am as self-righteous as they come. I have it made. And yet now what he's giving this picture is, we'll have this crown of righteousness. My righteousness is nothing. My righteousness is nothing but a crown that withers and fades. And this crown that Christ has given me, this crown of righteousness, is enduring. James chapter 1, verse 12 says, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life. Again, it's this eternal crown, this eternal prize. We talked about it last week with this idea of the rope. And just to clarify, I had several compliments on the illustration. This is not my illustration, okay? I stole this illustration, all right? Borrowed it. Maybe that's a better word. Stealing is such a violent thing. So I borrowed this illustration. I've seen it twice. I saw it once with Sean McDowell years ago, back when I was young and had hair. And then I saw it also, Francis Chan did it as well. And this follows a little bit more his style, but I want to give credit where credit is due on that. But we talked about it last week, okay, where we have this prize, and it's set before us, but it's an eternal prize. And we spend all of our time focusing on here. Well, I want to talk briefly about this idea of, we still have work to do here that points us into the eternal out here. And we see that when Paul says we go into strict training. So 1 Peter chapter 5, it also says, when the chief shepherd appears, here's this idea of Christ coming back, you will receive the crown of glory that will never fade away. It's interesting when we look at 1 Corinthians 9, a comparative to that Philippians chapter 3 we saw, there's a word that they use for prize, and it's a Greek word, and I'm actually not remembering that one offhand, but it's only used twice in scriptures, and those are both of the examples, okay? Philippians chapter 3 and now 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and then he switches to this idea, this word of diadem. We sing the song, you know, bring forth your royal diadem and crown him with many crowns. That's where that comes from. But this diadem is now this crown. It's this kingship piece, and it gives it to us. And it's eternal. It's not something that withers and fades. It's huge to think about and contemplate this reality. We strive and we strive and we strive in this world for something that will wither and fade. You know, do not store up for yourselves treasures, you know, on earth where moth and rust destroy, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven. And sometimes we downplay that so much. Okay. 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, for what is our hope, our joy, or the crown in which we will glory in the presence of our Lord Jesus when he comes? Is it not you? And then we continue on in verse 26 of 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He says, I do not run aimlessly. So therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. This is kind of this idea. We watch these races on the Olympics. They have a start and they have a finish. They have different distances. But it would be kind of the equivalent of what Paul is saying here. You have two people. They're going to run 400 meters each. All right? And one has a prize set before them. It's the finish line. It's on the track. And when they finish at the finish line, they have the prize. They'll say it's the gold medal. And 400 meters away from that start line, there's also a 7-Eleven. All right, that's exactly 400 meters. So they're both going to run 400 meters. All right, so the gun goes off, and one starts to run towards the prize. It's going to go around the track, and it's going to come back to the prize. And the other one runs to a 7-Eleven and gets a Slurpee. You know? And they come back, and so they've both run their 400 meters, but one has just run totally aimlessly. I can look in this life. I can look at the red on the rope, and I can run this life aimlessly and saying, I got my Slurpee. I'm good. Or I can look at this life and I can run to that prize that you set up before us. This idea, this crown of righteousness, this crown of glory, this crown of life that does not wither, that does not fade. But that's extremely difficult for us to hold on to, especially in our culture. Because we prize a lot of things. We prize our cars, we prize our houses, we prize our children. We do. That's really hard not to. But yet when we look at this and we contrast, all of that is nothing comparative to the greater prize. It's like a Slurpee comparative to that enduring, never-ending, unwithering prize that we see. But then he gives us this idea, okay, so I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave so that after I have preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. There's this idea that he's laying out here. The following Christ, the gospel, it's work. All right? That's a reality. And Joetta and Karen kind of talked about it with us this morning. It's work. It takes effort to follow. It's like you have to have this discipline. You have to get up, like we saw in the video, you have to get up, and you're not just striving for a prize that will wither and fade like a gold medal even, but you're striving for something that's endless. And so you get up in the morning, understanding, it's like, all right, today might be hard, but I got something that the Lord wants me to do today. You know, I want you to think, you know, I'm going to wrap it up here, but I want you to give some thought. I want you to think, you are where you are right now because someone invested in your life. You know what I'm saying? Every one of you, I'm pretty sure, I could say this pretty dogmatically, you're here this morning, you have some exposure to Christ, you are who you are and where you are because someone had taken the time to invest in your life in a spiritual way. You know, maybe it was a Sunday school teacher, maybe it was an elder of the church. I remember elders at my church, you know, coming up to me and praying for me. I had very little relationship with them, but they still invested in my life. And there's others that I had a great relationship with, huge connecting, and they were investing in my life. And Sarah tells the story of one lady. She says, I don't remember a lot of spiritual conversations, but I remember that she cared, a lady from her church. And it's like invested in her life. Now, you don't have to have all the right answers to be able to invest in someone's life, to be able to help someone in their journey. But you are here today because someone has invested in your life. Because someone looked at you and realized that you matter and that more specifically, you matter to God. So now we have to take it, we have to take a look at our lives. Do people that are around us in our lives matter? Do they matter to God? We'd say yes. Do they matter to us? Does the fact that they matter to God matter to us? You follow where I'm going there? So you go to work. You work side by side with some people. You know, maybe you're in a cubicle. You got someone across the way in the cubicle. Maybe you're a teacher and you have other teachers. Do the people that you work side by side, do they matter to you? Maybe the better question is, does their eternal state matter to you? Does the children that exist in this church, do they matter to you? Do the students that exist in this church matter to you? Do other adults in this church matter to you? Because if they matter to you and they matter to God, we have a role by which we have this work. Because remember the we statement that I pointed out to before? All right, Paul's not running just for the prize for himself. He uses the word we. We have this prize. And that's a huge contrast to what we just saw with the Olympic Games. One got the prize. Remember? Only one gets the wreath. The Isthmus Games, only one gets the prize. There's only one. And yet Paul just says, we run to get the prize. But the beauty of it is, that prize is available to all who follow, to all who seek after him. You know? That prize matters. And it should matter to us. And we can help others to come along and see and value that prize that's set out before them. I'll kind of wrap it up and bottom line it with this. Christianity is not a spectator sport. You know, Kyle Eilman talks about that in his book, Not a Fan. It's not, we watch football. I don't play football anymore. It hurts me, okay? I do some wrestling now. That still hurts me. But Christianity is not a spectator sport, where you sit down, you flip on the TV, and you watch. Christianity is a participatory sport, if you want to call it a sport. It's intended to be engaged in, not just sat back and watched. And so you have to prayerfully, okay, Lord, I need to get in. I need to be involved. That doesn't mean that everyone's got to do everything. That's not what we're saying at all. However, God's got something that he needs you to do, that he wants you to do, to be engaging with people so that you're not just sitting on the sidelines, that you're actually engaged, you're participating. You know, Karen used the word soldier. It's kind of like that. It's interesting. Michael Phelps, you know, he started swimming when he was 11 years old. Some coach saw, you know, his potential. Started training when he was 11. And he would swim 50 miles a week, even at 11. I know, right? I can't swim a mile. I can't swim across the pool. I can't swim. But that's for 5 hours a day, for 6 days a week. He doesn't run or swim aimlessly, but he swims with this goal in mind. And sometimes I think we forget what we're aiming at. We forget to realize that we need to see people as God sees people. I ride my bike through town or drive through town, and the Lord blesses me at times. This isn't always the case, where it's just like he gives me this picture. And I see someone a stranger. I don't have any idea who they are. I get just for a glimpse, it's like, oh, man, God loves that person. You know, and there's times where I can engage that person, but there's moments where I just for a brief moment, I can see that person as God sees them. And it's like, oh, does God want that person to know the prize that he has set before them? So I think it's time as followers of Christ that we say, all right, I'm here to worship, connect, and to serve. How can I serve? How can I serve these people that matter to God? And so I'm going to invite the worship team to come up, and I'll give a benediction following that. But as we worship and as we sing, we're going to come to this last song, and it's all about this idea of the end. It's all about this idea of what we have to look forward to and what it's all going to look like and what God has done for us. And so worship him in this setting and prayerfully consider, oh man, Lord, how can I invest in people that matter to you? And Lord, help me to let them matter to me as well.